You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, welcome back to the Stateside Podcast. I'm David Roska, and here joined by the wonderful, powerful Cameron Mizell, Stateside client, yeah, absolutely badass.
Wow, thank you for the kind words, buddy.
Of course. Well, when we're sitting in a room full of your platinum and gold records, I mean, what else am I supposed to think?
No platinums. No platinums, but I appreciate it.
Oh, well.
It's probably deceiving.
I'm colorblind, so what can I say? So yeah, so Cam, we'll go into this assuming that, you know, we're talking to people who have never heard of who you are. So what's
sure.
what's the elevator pitch for who you are and yeah, what's your story in the world?
Born in New York, raised in Florida. Started music stuff because my father put a bass in my hands around 4 or 5 to like ensure that he had a jam buddy. He's a master blues guitar player, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Little Rock, and had some classical training before that, piano, learned some of the basics, and then went down a ska and techno phase. Like, earliest I can remember was like this weird ska and techno phase.
1997 or so?
Yeah. So, or earlier, like, I think the first project I heard that like got me towards rock out of coming out of a Beatles, techno, ska thing, I heard Space Hog for the first time.
Nice.
I was like, this is the coolest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life. And somehow that eventually got me into rock and roll and like Seven Dust and Stained, Incubus.
Hell yeah.
And then I went to college at UCF and met some jam buddies, and we started a band called Last Winter and got... We were on a lot of MTV gigs and had a good amount of success. And then I kind of realized like the touring thing was so difficult.
Oh yeah.
And I was already self-producing our own stuff, not kind of realizing that this was something fruitful, and decided to go fully into that realm.
Hell yeah. Okay. So then since then, what is the, like, when was that you decided to go fully into production, and what has happened and changed since then? I know you've moved like 20 times since then.
Yeah. Well, I was a makeup artist for a minute. I was, went to school for special effects makeup, injury simulation, high fashion. That was around the time I was in the band. So I was like, I thought that was my biggest passion, the artistry, the makeup arts, sculpting, special effects makeup, animatronics, prosthetics.
Damn.
Yeah, and I was beautiful, and I loved that period of my life. I still try to get back into it once in a while. So it was around that time. It was like a kind of a turning point, because the makeup thing was really, really, really great, but there was something that I think I was just too... I don't know. Like, my head wasn't quite in it, and the music thing was just really clicking on the producing side.
Sure, it wasn't like scratching that creative itch anymore, sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, the creative itch, it was definitely scratching, but I think it was the ease of what was coming out. Like, I had kind of found this niche, and I was able to just do whatever I felt with little to no resistance.
Right.
And it started popping off.
Okay.
I was like, shit.
Hell yeah.
And then I even had a couple bandmates start telling me, like, yo, man, like, do you even see what's going on? Like, maybe... I was like, are you quietly telling me that maybe I should quit?
Well, better than loudly telling you. I've been both quietly and loudly told I should quit a band before, so. Sweet. So, and then you went into production and at some point ended up, you know, sort of playing A&R producer guy. And
yeah,
you've broken a couple of pretty significant bands.
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Definitely.
And, yeah. So like, tell me about how did that happen? And is that something that, you know, like playing the sort of like A&R, probably there's probably some mentorship in there and some like coaching to a degree.
Sure.
How did you hone those skills and how did you like get your foot in that door?
So I'm still and always have been a kind of socially awkward person. It takes a lot out of me, but I did learn some tools from makeup arts and being around artists,
totally.
being around very animated, colorful people who are also have something about them that's pulled back and really uncomfortable. And
totally,
you know, the I feel like all the great artists have this thing about them that's like, it's that discomfort that, you know, maybe the beautiful art comes from that spot. So I was self-producing all of my band stuff, and things were going great. And I ended up, I think my first like professional gig was assistant engineering for James Wisner.
Okay.
And I got to work on National Product from a while ago. So I got to assist on a lot of cool projects. And I kind of got a feel for, I started getting a feel for the hustle and what an actual schedule looks like.
Totally.
And I kind of leaned into that. James actually ended firing me because we parted ways on great terms. It was literally just like kind of same thing. Like, why don't you go do your own thing? Like I need like the timing stuff. I was already hitting the ground running with my own stuff and
totally.
And it was working, but I learned so much from James and got a lot of validation from him. And I think that the validation I got from James, I think, gave me the confidence to trust my process moving forward.
Totally. I think to quote Ted Lasso, a good mentor hopes you're going to leave. A great mentor knows you're going to leave. So
totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just all part of the process. And I'm starting to have some of those own experiences myself, and really it helps you. I mean, that kind of mentality really, it helps you enjoy life more.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also just a piece of treating people as humans.
Yeah.
And not just treating people as tools in your arsenal.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's a lot of people in this industry, whether it's the studio side or the you know, like, suit side, I say in a hoodie.
hoodie suit.
But I think oftentimes in this creative world where, you know, people work for exposure a lot and stuff like that, it's very easy to forget that, like, we're all humans. We all got shit going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, different spots on similar journeys.
Exactly.
In the grand scheme of things.
And all we all really want to do is do cool shit with cool people.
Exactly.
And yeah, as soon as it gets like beyond that, stuff gets weird. I feel like a lot of the time. So playing from, like, you know, starting your career in sort of just like a, well, I guess I'm going to try this. Did it feel like sort of a dive into the unknown, or did you feel pretty comfortable the whole time?
Well, it wasn't as far as like producing music, like there was something unknown about that, and there's always something unknown, like, especially moving to Nashville recently. It's an amazing quote from a producer buddy, Andrew Bayless, who has kind of helped me settle in since the day I stepped foot here. He says, I moved to Nashville and realized I've never written a good song in my entire life.
Nashville will certainly do that to you.
Yeah, so there's, you know, it's always kind of unknown in a sense, but the, again, like the style of music and sonically the sounds that I was creating were just from the heart and easy. I was just expelling energy, you know?
Totally.
So there wasn't anything to be unknown. It was just like, you know, let's fucking go. Here's what I'm feeling, you know, here's the sounds that are resonating with me. And
totally.
And, I think the whole genre of music that I found myself in was unknown because I found myself in a style of music that was brand new. It was kind of Wild West, and I was one of the handful of producers that were kind of leading this, you know, new giant sounding big,
totally
post-hardcore, hardcore, heavy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember I'm a decent bit younger than you, even though you don't show it. And and I remember, you know, like some of my first favorite bands that weren't just me leeching off my parents' taste in music was either stuff you worked on or stuff in that same sort of like
in that world. Yeah.
Yeah. Like even today, like one of my favorite records of all time is Dying is Your Latest Fashion by Escape the Fate.
Sure.
And I feel like that's one of those records that just totally like helped bring in that wave of music and you know, along with Memphis Mayfire, Sleeping with Sirens.
I'm actually not even familiar. What singer was that at that point?
That was their first record. That was with Ronnie Radke.
Got it. Cool. Yeah.
Which
he has stood the test of time, clearly.
Yes. Definitely nothing iffy there.
That's sick. I'm into it. I'm so into it.
But hey, that record is fucking incredible. I'm in love with that record. And if you're not super familiar, I will educate you when we get
Hell yeah.
This.
Let's go.
But yeah, so how, you know, when you were just talking about your early approach to production, and based on what I know of you, that seems pretty similar to a lot of the ways you approach things now, which is like, let's just go with a feel and a vibe, and let's go with what sounds good instead of getting bogged down with all the technical, like, you know, dialing in this synth to exactly the sound we're looking for, and more like, let's just create a feel. Is that something that you think with technology, like recording technology and all these DAWs and plugins and, you know, just way too much gear to choose from these days, is that something that you think has gotten harder to keep doing, or has it gotten easier, or is it just a different sort of way of looking at it?
I think any tool is going to make the process easier, used the right way. I think there's so many tools out there and ever increasing for writers, producers. What you just said, what you explained, saying like I kind of focus more on the vibe. That's like wishful thinking for me. That's like perfect scenario. I'm focused on the vibe, and then I can just kind of smash through to keep the vibe going.
Totally.
And then maybe get, you know, obsessive later. But I fall into the trap all the time, and it's the more I'm, what's the word, exposed to the Nashville world and the writers out here, the producers out here, I'm realizing how important it is to exercise my ability to stay away from falling into that trap.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think Nashville in particular has such a different way of writing music than so many other towns.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I feel like there's a lot of places in the country where you don't just throw some people in a room together with a guitar and a DAW and out, you know.
Sure.
2 hours later, out comes basically a rough of a fully produced song.
Totally.
And yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. And yeah, have you, since you moved to Nashville, have you felt like clearly you already said, you know, your songwriting chops have gone up, but have you felt...
They're going up. They're going up. Okay. I don't know how far they've gone up, but I'm like, I'm really working hard at it.
Fuck yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Amazing.
It's front of the brain.
have you felt like, because I know that there's another thing that's sort of unique to Nashville songwriting is there's so much, it happens so much faster, I think, than a lot of places. Was that like hard to adjust to at first?
It's where I'm at right now. I'm adjusting to it. Like I should probably give myself more credit.
You should.
I have a thing about that. I'm very self-deprecating because it's like a comfort thing. But
do you mean because you're a musician?
but yeah, it's where I'm at right now. I'm like I feel like it's a pretty significant stage in my career where it's a focus is instead of being in my own comforts and doing only what comes really, really easy for me. Yeah. It's an important stage I'm at.
Totally.
And I'm currently in it. And yeah, since I moved here, it's already just miles above, just based on feedback, being exposed to, you know, these writing rooms.
Totally.
Hearing the importance of a story and where it makes sense to, like the art of, like you can use ignorance as a feel, as a vibe for a song.
Sure.
And that's fine, you know, like but like the importance of telling a story and then depending on the genre or the vibe of it, like you can make things ignorant or less ignorant. You can make things really smart, really basic.
Totally.
But having that amazing backbone from what I'm seeing is and experiencing is probably the most important part, to build that backbone without totally fucking obsessing over it. And then you can obsess later, but keep yourself from fucking with the backbone too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so interesting, the like sort of, I guess, state of the union on Nashville songwriting that you just gave is you could take that snippet of what you just said and apply it to country music.
Sure.
And it's the exact same thing.
Sure.
And I feel like so often, especially with people who don't live in this town but are looking at this town from the industry, they go like, yes, they have other music that's not country, but country's the thing. And, you know, country is like, you're either in country or you're not in country.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much through thread, and like, it's all music. We're still writing songs, whether it has distorted guitars and, you know, bass drops or
twangling
banjo.
And now more than ever, it sounds like there's, I mean, what is a genre anymore? There's like really specific things that it's almost like not even genre. It's just specific things you have to keep in mind for your goal or your audience. But I mean, like the new Hardy stuff, like what the fuck?
Yeah. The new Hardy stuff.
Oh, sick.
Lakeview with their sort of
wild.
Like, yeah.
And that's like, that's why I got so excited about music in the first place, was like the wild shit. Like
totally,
like what the fuck's happening here? Who is this person? Like what's their story? Who are the people behind this wild shit that I've never heard before or makes me like uncomfortable? Like I can't believe they just, you know, like either like, oh my god, I can't believe they just said that, or like that was the cringiest thing in the world that I just heard and I'm so obsessed still. Like why do I still love this cringy fucking thing happening? And I think that's like the beauty of it all is
totally
that. And that's a great artist too, the ones that just let it out and then stand by it firmly is
totally
like so inspiring to me. And yeah, something so respectable about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think a lot of that we can sort of thank TikTok for better or for worse.
I think so too. Yeah,
you know, like
the cringe genre.
Yeah,
just like get comfortable with yourself and do some wild shit.
Yeah, but also like that's how we open up and take music to the next level with today's technology. You know, so I mean, like I think artists like John Harvey, for example, or you know, in this same building, like the Riot House folks, who are sort of taking pop punk and they're not only modernizing it, but they're, you know, adding much more produced elements and a lot more electronic instruments and turning it into its own new thing, taking it into the future, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, being so close in proximity to that whole operation has been another giant aspect of, like, my evolving.
Totally.
As a producer, artist, writer, at any of it, being exposed to those kind of groups and processes, it's wildly valuable.
Totally. Yeah. Well, while we're on that topic, we should probably talk about this weird, crazy, awesome building that we're in right now.
Yeah.
So the way I typically explain it is, like, it's sort of broken up into two sections. The one side is, you know, a bunch of rooms like this where producers are renting out sort of like mix suites and small studio spaces. And then in the middle, there's this big, beautiful sort of like Studio A live room type thing. And then the other side is all like TikTok sets and photo video studios. And it's something where, you know, an artist could come in and you could produce their song. And then, you know, they could go literally across the hall and your girlfriend Eliza could come in and take their album art photos. And then, you know, the team here, they're called Classic 77. They could come and shoot a music video for them.
Yep.
And they walk out with, you know, they walk in with an idea and they walk out with a project that they can, you know, shop around to labels or release or do whatever.
Oh, sure. 3 to 6 months worth of content. Just boom, you know?
Exactly.
It's beautiful. It's an all-inclusive creative facility.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's something that me and one of my clients who you know very well because his room is right on the other side of that wall, Joey Burcham, have been talking about building something like this for a very, very long time. And then
I've been involved on a couple of startups with the same idea, and this is the first one that really they're just doing everything the right way and more.
And I think one thing that makes it so good is they're not trying to do everything themselves.
Yeah.
It's not just Matt, the owner, saying, I'm going to do all of it and I'm going to take all the money. He's collaborating with other people. He's finding people whose strengths are in that certain thing and, you know, creating a community, which is the whole point of music in the first place, if you ask me.
Yep.
Yeah. So what does, you know, nowadays you're pretty damn established in the field and in your career, and I'm sure you're a lot more comfortable than you were, you know, 15, 20 years ago doing this stuff.
You'd be shocked. You'd be shocked.
Well, you've always got a smile on your face when I come by. So, but maybe that's just
I appreciate that. Thank me you. Thank you for noticing.
But I'm curious, like, what your day-to-day looks like as a modern producer who's, you know, not trying to be stuck in the past.
Yes, that's the key right there. Yeah. Yeah, and on so many levels. There was a period from maybe 2017 through COVID, probably, I mean, 4 years-ish, a lot more than that. But yeah, like a period there that was a lot of internal learning and growing, because the producing thing, my whole career up until, you know, the last 4 years-ish has been just nonstop going for broke and doing whatever is coming out, whatever I feel, just fucking going for it. And I had that period of internal work that period that a lot of us experience at some point, and maybe a lot of us experienced in that kind of similar time frame, where I really wanted to check myself and find out my why. And the why that I've been able to come to, by the way, the find out your why thing, that that was a question that was asked by one of my buddies, Mike Maloney. He's like, he's an actual hero. Actual superhero. Anyway, but yeah, Mike's the shit. Mike Maloney. He. That's what he mentioned. I was like at my worst, just like really going through it. And Mike's like, man, you got to figure out your why. And that really like stuck with me. So I figured out my why, and I think my why is being immersed in people that help me grow. Being immersed in people that help me grow, and helping people grow. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I'm in a very similar boat from the management point of view.
Yeah.
You know, I think I talk about this a lot. There's a lot of spiritual similarities between a producer and a manager, I think.
Yeah.
In that, you know, both of our goal is to grow people or grow ideas.
Yeah.
And, you know, often you're doing that through sounds and I'm doing that through a healthy combination of making friends, sending emails, jumping on calls, and occasionally being a pit bull. But
fuck yeah, let's go.
Yeah, so I completely feel that, and yeah, like I have never wanted to be famous myself, but I'd love to help make some people famous. And
yeah, it's really when you see people you care about or people you've made a connection with do something special. And then beyond that, if you are a part of it, it's so rewarding.
Totally.
And I guess finding my why, you know, I'm like maybe selfishly looking for how does my why help me? You know, it's like, well, that's it. Like I really racked my brain around it for a while, and I think it's as simple as that. I feel so inspired and touched when I make new connections and I learn something and I grow somehow and get put into uncomfortable situations and then grow from those and like transcend that. That's exactly, you know, in hindsight, it's exactly what I've been providing people, and I had my why the whole time. I just had to understand it and lean
totally
into it. So.
Yeah,
I'm leaning into everything right now.
Awesome. So how would you say, have things changed in a tangible way since finding your why? Or is it more like it's more just changed, you know, the way you look at everything?
I just realized I completely strayed from your original question.
No, that's great. That's the point of a podcast, dude.
I'm honed back in. so my day-to-day... especially since I moved here, I'm still in almost in the right zone, but I've really just been figuring out how do I manage the way I've been, you know, running my own show my whole career based on just just kind of, you know, grinding and finding something that spoke to a lot of people and then just full blown doing whatever I feel compared to now, like how do I manage my time properly? Because I have goals in growth. I don't want to be stuck in the same thing. I want people to be able to use and utilize me in more than just one specific way.
Totally.
I'm super, super like ADD all over the place.
Never would have guessed.
and there's probably deeper things there, but I'd like to have at least 5 to 10 things going on.
Sure.
On some level, whether it's like, but always a focus. When I have an artist in person, they are my focus. If I'm working with somebody in person, they are my absolute focus. So I'll have projects in person. Yeah, whatever time I can squeeze in around an in-person project I have, I'll work on things that are totally not in the same part of the process.
Okay.
Just so I can have something totally different to remove me so I can get back into the thing.
Like, right. Yeah.
With a fresher head,
totally.
But still be as productive as I can be. So maybe I'll work on like a master or something after I, you know, 3 days of doing preliminary writing with a project or something.
That also helps with longevity. Like, I'm sure if all you did all day was track guitars, you'd probably hate tracking guitars after a while. I imagine probably wouldn't take that long.
I mean,
but
you hit the nail on the head with like, one of the things that is really exhausting for me is tracking others' guitars. If it's, thankfully there's more and more projects I get where this is suggested right off the bat, but when I'm tracking my own guitars, I have my own process. It's kind of a fun, like, It's almost like riding your bike in the park.
Sure.
You kind of just zone out. You still get the job done perfectly, because otherwise you're going to fall off the bicycle. But you can be removed and be productive in the same way where you're giving yourself a break, taking a bike ride. You know, it's like,
totally.
I can totally get into that. It's when, yeah, there's somebody in person, like I'm totally obsessed with making sure that they know and feel that I'm giving them their undivided attention.
Totally. And I think that's one of those sort of intangible producers that takes, or intangible things that takes a, you know, someone who is good at making music sound good in a DAW and turns them into a great producer.
Sure.
Is having that in person, making them feel comfortable, making them feel like, you know, they are the number one priority, and
yeah.
genuinely making them the number one priority.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, they're going to be like, well, yeah, this music sounds good, but we didn't have fun while we were making it.
Yeah.
And we're all doing this because we want to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we were all in the music industry to just make a bunch of money and cash out, well, none of us would be in the music industry, but,
sure.
you know, we'd go work in finance or something.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's definitely there's that human side. And especially, you know, like we mentioned before, working with artists, it's there's a type there, you know.
Oh yeah,
there's for sure a type there, and it's the type that I naturally can relate to the most, and I get most out of. My trajectory these days is really just leaning into overcoming discomforts, social anxieties, leaning into honing in on you know, my one-on-one skills, and more and more being confident about going into situations that there's no reason for me to have confidence about.
Hell yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, I think regardless of what you do, I imagine most of the people who listen to this probably work in music in some way.
Sure.
But regardless of what you do, but it's especially in the music industry, I think there's so much, you know, like most of our heroes at one point didn't know what they were doing.
Oh yeah.
And with a lot of things today, don't know what they're doing. And that's
Surely.
Fine because
yeah.
they come at it with, you know, the confidence of someone who's like, well, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And they do.
Yeah.
And that's
love that blind confidence. As long as there's a cap, the
totally.
Blind confidence is
yeah.
like
separating.
That is why I'm so attracted to that. Just wild blind confidence while understanding the realm of being a good human being.
Totally. Yeah. Separating confidence and you know, like self-confidence and ego,
yeah.
I think is very important there.
That's a good way to put it.
You know,
it,
like
yeah.
to have a lot of confidence and a little bit of ego,
yeah.
I think is like the perfect mix
yeah.
for something like that.
Sure.
But there's a lot of people who have a lot of ego and not a lot of confidence. And that is, that can get
that
tough.
Might work on some level too
totally. Yeah.
for
I mean,
a moment.
I
and
think,
if you're smart about it afterwards, then you can still play that into a good goal moving forward or plan of attack moving forward. But
absolutely. I mean, I think there's a hell of a lot of, I mean, I imagine, I don't know this for sure, but I imagine there's a lot of rappers who have a lot of confidence or a lot of ego and not a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
And that
oh,
I'm
yeah.
sure fuels a lot of that.
Yeah.
That world.
Yeah, totally.
Well, sweet. Well, I'm not going to take your time too much longer.
Okay.
I just have, you know, one more question for you.
I have all the time
you.
In the world for you.
Well,
all the time.
I just heard you take a phone call that disagrees with that statement.
Son of a bitch.
I appreciate the sentiment, but but yeah, so like I'd love to hear your sort of state of the union on the music industry. And however you want to take that is the right way to take it.
Okay.
But, you know, where do you think we're at? Do you think we're in a good place? Where do you think we're headed? Do you think things are looking good?
I think, to be frank, outside of, you know, really specific things that are working in that time frame or whatever,
yeah.
we have all these clues that things are working in a certain period of time. We have evidence of repeated cycles that are damn, yeah, I mean, you can almost trust them fully.
Yeah.
Cycles of things. But I think that we're always in a incredible time for music industry. So it's and things things change, but not really. Things get more, maybe more complicated, maybe, but easier at the same time, you know, like we were talking about your tools. Mm-hmm. Sure, it's a lot. You have a lot more tools these days to take your basement, bedroom, car ideas to fruition with more ease. But there's also, because of that, there's a level of talent that evens the playing field.
Totally.
Because, you know, that it, things get easier and more difficult all at the same time. And I guess more complicated, but that depends on how you're looking at it. And I think music industry is always going to be, it's going to be the same. It's complicated. It's so much fun. It's so bad, so good. There, bad people exist everywhere, but it's just a good person in a bad state. Most, you know, but it's cutthroat. It's exciting. It's tough business. It's a absolutely tremendous amount of work if you're really in it. And even the artists who, or producers or anyone involved who isn't going the Wolf of Wall Street, just grind way of things, and maybe you're that phenom artist who just pops the fuck off, you have still entered the same world because
totally
you now have that feeling and you now know what's possible. And either you're going to obsess in your one song that you do a year that pops off, or you're gonna obsess over your nonstop work. But either way, it's just,
and you know, I think oftentimes in that certain situation, the person who goes from I'm at college and I made a TikTok to holy shit, I just signed with Capitol Records.
Yeah.
Like, that is, doesn't mean their life is getting any easier.
No.
Their life is getting much harder.
Much harder.
There's now expectations and responsibilities and people to report to. And yeah, that's not an easy thing to handle.
Mm-mm. It's really complicated. It's really complicated. And it's an industry that is based around, in my eyes, some of the most complicated human beings you will ever come across. Most spiritual, emotional, heartfelt,
totally
complicated human beings ever are the phenom artists or the people in the music industry obsessing over their crafts, you know?
Totally. I mean, I think any very talented and passionate artist has to have that sort of like duality of holy shit, when you look at them on the outside, they're this perfect person to you that just looks amazing, but no one is that. Yeah. And to make truly amazing art, it takes a certain level of brokenness a lot of the time, I think. And while that can be taken as sad, I think that's how humans have always been. And there's always going to be, you know, hurting, broken people. So if they're taking that and turning it into beautiful art, then I see that as a good thing.
I think that's what's so attractive to entertainment as well, or arts. To see, at least for me, to see somebody, I feel like it's not just me personally, but from what I've seen and experienced over the last 20 years, it's the artists that really pop off and connect and can create a lifelong career out of it are the ones who are the most vulnerable and never back down from it and can maintain some sort of positive message hidden inside whatever the style of music is.
Absolutely.
Some sort of uplifting positive message, even in the darkest music, when somebody is really, you can just see it. Even if they had songwriters, even if maybe they weren't even there to top line that day, but when they perform that song and their version of it, there's something happening there where it's genuine, it's open, it's vulnerable, and then it becomes a great success. It's one of the most inspiring things in the world.
Totally. I mean, and I don't even think that positive message has to be lyrical or so in your face that you notice it right away. Like, for example, one of my favorite bands in the world, Reflections, they have a record called The Color Clear.
Okay.
And it is mainly about the lead singer's basically hitting rock bottom on a heroin addiction.
Sure.
The lyrics are incredibly dark. It is very, very heavy and doomy and scary would be a good word for a lot of people, I think. But for some reason, I am drawn to listen to that record when, you know, early summer when you're first, like, driving with the windows down. And, like, in, you know, like, when I am really happy, for some reason, that record, I don't know what it is about it, but it just brings good feelings about out
of
me. And I think it's just feeling the raw emotion and passion that went into making it and, you know, knowing that this isn't just someone telling a silly story.
Yeah.
But it comes from a very human place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the humanity.
And if you don't know that record, I'll educate you on that one as well.
Yes, please. I generally don't know anything. Like, if 90% of the time, if anyone asks me, hey, have you ever heard of, I promise you, you can already just guess my answer is no. But I'm very interested.
Hell yeah. well, then I'll make you a playlist.
And then I'll find out later that I did know them. I just needed a spark. But
totally. But then
but
also
names and,
like,
stuff I'm not good with.
You also walked into Joey's room down the hall a couple days ago talking about, like, some Korean opera singer.
Oh my god.
So like
Kimash.
Yeah. So did, like, wait. You know some things. You like that is not that is niche.
I think Dimash.
Yeah.
My goodness. Speaking of that. Yeah, that's like I'm on a deep dive. That it's like very rare. Thank God it happens often with my projects these days, and I owe that a lot to you, James, stateside, and also the network that I totally lucked out with and welcomed me in Nashville. But like yeah, finding an artist and especially being involved with them, but like just in general, finding an artist that you're like, my God,
yeah,
this is just amazing. Just like really being wowed and touched. I think that's like it's essentially the drug that everybody in the music industry is just it's the high that we're all chasing.
Totally.
Is that amazing feeling of connecting and if you're lucky enough, being a part of it.
And that's, I imagine, why the most, you know, like, glamorous or, I guess, like, famous position on my side of the industry is, like, the A&R guy.
Yeah.
You go and you find talent that hasn't been discovered yet. Like,
yep.
Other than being that talent, what's fucking cooler than that?
Yep.
That's fucking awesome.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Completely.
Well, sweet. I guess we'll let you get going.
Cool.
And yeah, thank you so much for listening. And is there anything that you want to plug before we get off here? Anywhere you want to send people?
Honestly, no. I just plugged Stateside. We plugged Classic. Gave a shout out to a homie.
How about you say Dimash's full name so that we can...
I have no idea.
All right, go find Dimash. he has a last name, but we're not telling you. Sweet. Well, thank you so much.
Hell yeah. You too. Thank you for your time, buddy.
Absolutely.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.